National Council of Jewish Women, Pittsburgh Section, Oral History Number 2. My name is Marvin Herzog. My respondent's name is Joan Friedberg. And today is Thursday, October 15th, 1998. Joan, tell me, where did you meet your husband?
I met him in Pelham, New York, at a graduation party that his aunt was having for his 16-year-old cousin who just graduated from high school. My mother and his aunt were friends, and that's how we happened to be invited to the party, and he was on his way from Cambridge, Mass, back home to Pittsburgh, and he just happened to be there. So I always felt that was my lucky day.
And how long did he court you before you were married?
That was June 1949, and we were married in September 1950. Well, 15 months.
What's his first name?
Simeon. S-I-M-E-O-N.
And where was he originally from?
Pittsburgh.
And was he in the armed
yes.
forces at all?
Yes.
Tell me about that?
Well, he was in the Army from 1943 to 46. He had started at Harvard at 16 and then was drafted at 18, as he knew he would be. And he was in this country being trained, and then he was sent overseas to Japan and was in the Army of Occupation in Japan for the last year. I'm not sure when he went. It must have been just after the surrender, because he wasn't involved in fighting.
Was he commissioned?
Yes, he entered as a private and he came out as a second lieutenant.
Well, and did he enjoy his military service?
Well, I don't know whether you could say enjoy. It was certainly a very important period of his life. He was very young, had been quite sheltered, and he was thrown into a different world, where he had to get along with all kinds of people, which he did, and eventually to command a small group. And I think of that sometimes, these 19 and 20-year-old young men who were put in positions of great responsibility. I think it was a time that really shaped him in many ways. And he was exposed to a foreign culture. We've always had Japanese friends. He's a physicist, and there are many Japanese physicists working in the same field. And he's always had an interest in Japanese culture and history.
I take it he learned the language, too.
No, he didn't.
Did he?
No, he didn't. He had an interpreter there.
I see. Yeah. And when you met him, what occupation was he in?
He was a graduate student at what was then Carnegie Tech.
And did he live close by the university, or did he live in Squirrel Hill?
He lived in Squirrel Hill. He had come home from the Army, had finished Harvard, then had come back to Pittsburgh, and he lived with his parents until he married.
I see. What kind of Judaism did your in-laws practice? That is, were they conservative, or were they Orthodox, or
they were Reformed? They have been members of Road of Sholem for many, many years. And my mother-in-law particularly was an active member of the congregation of Road of Sholem.
And did she participate in the committees and the various learning efforts at the temple?
Yes, yes. And I think she was influential in shaping some of the things we do today, like the way we celebrate Simchas Torah was something that she was very interested in establishing.
Did Simeon go to Sunday school?
Yes, and he was confirmed, but not bar mitzvah. I don't think they bar mitzvahed boys.
No.
Certainly not girls in those days.
No, not in those days, you're right. And tell me, what universities did he go to?
He went to Harvard as an undergraduate and to Carnegie Institute of Technology, now Carnegie Mellon, for his graduate work.
And what degree did he finally wind up with?
He has a doctorate in physics.
And does he teach now?
Well, he's now retired, but he taught for about 40 years at Carnegie Mellon.
Uh-huh. And he's now retired, so we could call him retired and unemployed. Or do we say unemployed and retired?
Well, either way.
Now, let's talk once more about you. What kind of volunteer work did you do while your children were still at home?
Well, I remember that I did some tutoring in Pittsburgh Public Schools. I was a member of a group called the Job Advisory Service, which we formed to help women get back into the work world. I was a member, but I didn't do much for League of Women Voters, and I was active as a Bryn Mawr alumna. I don't remember anything
else. Did you hold office in these organizations?
I think I had an office in the Bryn Mawr alumna group, but I don't remember. I think I might have been secretary and at one time president, but it's a long time ago.
Now, you did some writing, I know, in your own field.
Yes.
Did you do this while you were at home with the children?
Well, I went back to graduate work when the youngest was still under two. So the writing I did at that time was what was needed for my master's and then my doctorate. So my professional writing really was later, after the children had grown up and left.
It must have taken quite some time for you to have achieved your degree status.
Many years, much longer than other people. At that time you could go part-time, and it took me 4 years to do a master's that people would normally do in one, and I don't even remember, 5 years, I think, to do the doctorate.
Were you able to do any professional writing while your children were still at home? I guess you told me that.
Yeah, no, I did the graduate work, but not anything else, as I remember.
Uh-huh. Well, now that you're an empty nester, how do you occupy most of your time?
Well, I'm still very active with Beginning with Books. I'm on the advisory board, which will soon become a board of director, and I'm on a number of committees. Through Beginning with Books, I read to a little girl once a week. I meet with a friend of mine who is a writer for children and is blind, and we read together. I'm on a couple of other boards. I'm on the advisory board of the Jewish Archives at the Western Pennsylvania History Center, and I'm on the board of the Chamber Music Society. And I keep house, and I think about the things I'm not doing, like cleaning the closets, and do things with my grandchildren.
Well, are you still actively teaching at Pitt?
No, I haven't taught at Pitt for many years. From Pitt, I went to preschool teaching, and I haven't done that for many years. Once my job at Beginning with Books became full-time, I had to give up teaching.
When you were teaching, what subject did you teach?
Well, I taught English composition. I occasionally taught literature and then children's literature, and that was the most important thing for me.
I see. Aside from Rudolf Schoen, presently, what other organizations do you belong to, professional or otherwise?
Well, I'm a dues-paying member of something called the National Association for the Education of Young Children, which has also a Pittsburgh chapter, Three Rivers Reading Council. I think those are the only professional organizations.
Now, you don't hold an office in any of these organizations.
No.
Do you and your husband, since you're both in the teaching profession, do you ever work together professionally?
No, I'm not a physicist. I'm not a scientist. He knows much more about literature than I know about science.
Well, it might be a little easier.
I guess.
Well, aside from raising remarkable children, what would you consider to be your most significant achievement?
Well, outside of the family, I think it's beginning with books. The founding and the nurturing and the growth of that organization, I would say. For me, the most important.
Can you tell us about the organization? Tell us what that's, what it's like, or what it does?
Well, it's an organization that was started by my friend Elizabeth Siegel and myself when we were both teaching at Pitt. We felt it was important to try to help other families enjoy the same kind of experience with books and reading and sharing illustrations and so forth with their children that we had experienced ourselves as growing up and as parents. We felt it was of the utmost importance that children hear stories read aloud from the earliest days. And we were convinced that many more parents would read to their children if books were accessible to them and if there was some guidance available as to how one might go about it. Non-directive kind of guidance. And that's what we do. We started with one small program that reached 1,000 families. We now have 4 programs that reach far more families in Pittsburgh and surrounding areas. We're not a national organization. We have been a partner, an affiliate of the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh, which has been very important to us ever since our founding. And we always work to foster library use, to encourage families to use the library.
Now, in view of your association with children,
mm-hmm.
your interest in children, obviously, can you contrast for us the way in which you were brought up by
mm-hmm.
your parents with the Dr. Spock generation that seemed to encourage permissiveness and the current educational mores that we have today that seem to have lost its way?
Well, I don't think I would characterize Dr. Spock well interpreted as permissive. I think that what he emphasized was the dignity and individuality of children and the importance of observing one's children and following them while providing an adequate structure. My own bringing up was probably quite liberal. I remember my mother saying that the doctor said that my sister and I as infants should be fed on a strict 4-hour schedule, even if we were screaming for food and she couldn't stand it and she broke the schedule, and that if your baby sucked its thumb, you were supposed to put some kind of aluminum band on the elbow to prevent. She couldn't bear that either. So she went counter to much of the advice of this period, late 1920s. In terms of how I see my grandchildren brought up is completely...
What are your children brought up?
My children. Well, you know, I didn't do as good a job as I wished I had or thought I should.
Were you more permissive, do you feel, than your parents were?
No, I don't think so, but it was a very different world. I was brought up in the country during a depression. I was in high school during the war. Our children grew up in Squirrel Hill. So it's hard to compare.
And your grandchildren?
You mean in terms of permissiveness?
And mores.
And mores.
And the...
I would probably see a consistency of pattern through the 3 generations in what is emphasized.
Are you entirely happy with the way that your children in turn bring up their children?
Yeah, I think they're doing a very good job. And it's very interesting to me to watch the involvement of the young farmers, which which of course is so different in this generation and so admirable. I think it's so important.
That's good to hear. In retrospect, is there anything that you would do differently or anything that you would have changed if you had the opportunity to change it, knowing what you know now?
About the upbringing of our children or about my own life?
I think about your own life generally.
Well, I couldn't have done anything about it, nor could my parents, but I wish I had had a good foundation in Jewish education. I wish I had learned Hebrew as a child, but there was no opportunity to do it. My father could have taught me, but he didn't have the time. He was working probably 16, 18 hours a day as a farmer. He didn't have time to teach his children Hebrew. Of course, I wish I had never lost my temper with my children, but that's probably wishing to be an angel. I can't think of other things. I think that the Jewish education our children received was not what I wish it had been, not as thorough, and I think not as meaningful as I believe it could have been and probably is now.
Well, considering the fact that you were brought up in a rural atmosphere, a small community,
mm-hmm.
It's quite remarkable that you have extended your Jewish roots the way that you have. The life of a farmer,
mm-hmm.
not to speak of the life of a farmer's children, must have been very difficult.
Well, it wasn't difficult for us as children. It was really idyllic. And for my father, I think it offered the opportunity to be independent, to be his own boss, to do something very satisfying. He was a person who was very good with his hands, so what grew under his hands was very satisfying. And when I talk about my Jewish education, wishing that it had been different, that would have been the education that I would have received outside the home in another circumstance. We were a Jewish family, and I grew up with a sense that that I was very proud to be a Jew, and conscious of myself as a person outside the mainstream in the community we grew up in, since there weren't other Jewish families except for my father's partner. And I think that's a valuable experience, that it's to be on the outside looking, to be a smaller, how should I put it exactly, not an alien, but to be outside the mainstream is not necessarily a negative factor. And I remember one of my children saying in Alderdice, she said, they stand up and tell us that something about the percentages of Jewish children, students, she said, as if the world was Jewish, predominantly Jewish. She said, I know it's not. So they were conscious of the fact that living in Squirrel Hill and going to Alderdice at that time, I think Alderdice was less diverse than it is now. That wasn't a real reflection of the real world either. And one of the differences for our grandchildren and for all children now who have access to books is that books for children now reflect to a far greater extent the rich variety of the human experience. I know I'm getting off the subject a little bit, but when I was a child, I never remember reading a book except a Bible story or a book written for Jewish children that had a Jewish person in it. The first Jewish character I met was Rebecca in Ivanhoe in high school. And certainly you didn't see black people in children's books except in a pejorative way, speaking in with accents, being uneducated, ignorant, terrible words being used to describe them. Nor Asians, nor Native Americans, except in a stereotypical way. And the books that I've discovered in my professional life and that I read with my grandchildren and with other children are so much, such a better reflection and respectful admiring reflection of the diversity that we see around us. And this country is going to become increasingly diverse, not less. And we need to prepare our children to live in that world.
In view of the fact that children seem to be fascinated with television, along with many other attractions that seem to take up their time and their effort and their interest, and your primary experience with and obvious leaning toward literature, do children today read more than they did in your generation, do you feel, or less?
I don't have the information to answer that as I would like. I do think that young parents today have a much greater challenge than I did as a parent in guiding television viewing, limiting the time and guiding the selection of programs. It's very hard, and it's a challenge I'm glad I don't have to face. But the children I see are readers, and still find fascination in books.
Can you contrast Pittsburgh today with the Pittsburgh of your youth, socially, environmentally, culturally, politically?
Well, when I came to Pittsburgh, which was 1950, it was just before the first Renaissance. So it was still smoky, dirty. When you drove downtown, you still went by those big mills. There was grit on the windowsills in the morning. But it wasn't the Pittsburgh my mother-in-law described, where you had to wash the curtains every week if you were a good housekeeper. So certainly, physically, environmentally, the city is very, very different than it was. Socially, it is also. I never saw an African-American person as a clerk, a salesperson in Horns or Gimbel's or Kaufman's. I was never waited on by a black person in a bank. Never saw a black person in a professional capacity as a physician or a lawyer or a social worker. And although I think life still presents tremendous challenges for minority populations, I think that has changed, and I'm grateful to have had the chance to see that change. Let me see, you said environmentally, physically, socially, what was the other? Culturally?
Culturally, yes.
Well, there's much more theater. There wasn't much theater when I came to Pittsburgh. The Scape Art Museum has been built since I came, and the Warhol Museum and the Science Museum, all those things have been built in the last, during my time. Certainly there was always plenty of music. The Pittsburgh Symphony and the Y series were active when I first came.
Would you say this is a better place now than it was when you arrived here years ago?
I think in many ways it is. I think it's a sad place for people who expected to spend their lives in the steel mills and in other industries like that. I think it's been very hard. When I go to a place like Braddock, and I think the millionaires made their money here and then they left, and it's desolate and it's sad. And they made their money on the backs of hardworking people.
Well, of course, you came from a hard-working background, too.
Mm-hmm.
When you lived on the farm, for example, did you have chores? Did you have things that you had to do as a member of the family, a member of the farm community?
Well, I enjoyed it more than my sister, Ellen. I used to help. We both helped, but I probably did more. Yeah. I collected eggs. I didn't know how to candle them. That was my father's task, but I weighed them. We used to vaccinate our chickens, our young chickens, every summer, and I'd get up at 5 and go out to the field and help him. I think I worked a little bit in a vegetable garden. I don't remember doing much of that. And I must have helped my mother when she canned and when we went out and picked blueberries that she made into jam, that sort of thing. I don't remember that they were assigned chores somehow, but I used to help my father on the egg route going into town, and I loved doing that. It was fun.
I'm interested to know, as a Jew, your parents and you and your siblings living in a farm community where Jewish activity was absent,
mm-hmm.
and the rest of the population, people who were your contemporaries,
mm-hmm.
were not Jewish.
Right.
Was it at all uncomfortable for you to socialize with people at school, for example?
No, and it was a mixed community. There were a number of first-generation families from Italy.
Oh.
So there was a Catholic and Italian segment of the population, and then the older, in the sense of longer lived, Protestant Northern European group that you would think of as typically New England. It wasn't awkward. Again, I was conscious of myself as different in some areas, that we didn't celebrate Christmas, for instance. But it wasn't uncomfortable. I remember my mother saying that a minister from the local church came and asked if she wanted to send us to the Sunday school. And he did it it was a generous gesture. He was extending friendship. And she explained to him, or tried to, that no, she didn't think so, that she thought it would be very confusing for us. He didn't think of it as sectarian. But of course it was. It was a church that acknowledged or that believed Jesus was the Son of God, and we indeed would have found it very confusing.
So you weren't ostracized in any way in the community?
No. I remember.
And you felt as though you were accepted by...
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think my parents were very highly respected. My mother was an active member of the women's club. I don't remember ever experiencing anti-Semitism, but there was a nasty little boy in my sister's class who ran around after her on the playground and yelled bad things.
Well, along that same line, how do you view Pittsburgh's Jewish community and the overall ethos of Pittsburgh? Are we an influential character in the story of Pittsburgh today, do you think?
I would think so. Yes, I think that the Jewish residents, citizens of Pittsburgh, have contributed a great deal to the civic life that they honored and accepted for that. I think my mother-in-law's work with the Jewish Community Relations Council was certainly valued and of great interest to me, watching her do it. I know she was very active in, not just in Jewish affairs, but she used to go to Harrisburg, getting up at 4 in the morning with a group of people to lobby the legislature for Fair Employment Practice Act, so that minorities, not just Jewish minorities, would be treated fairly in the work world. So I hope it's a good influence. I think we have an influence.
You came from a remarkable family.
Yes.
To get away from that particular subject, Joan, in some universities there's a slogan, publish or perish. So, did you do some publishing, or did you ever feel as though you must publish in order to exist in the academic community?
I perished instead. I didn't write.